WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. Now, here's your host, Paul Dragoo.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. It's Wednesday, March 29th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. We've got a great show today. A little later, we're going to play an interview that senior editor Rebecca Terrell conducted with an advocate for patients endangered by lethal hospital COVID protocols. His mission was triggered after he lost his young daughter to what he considers intentionally deadly protocols. You don't want to miss this. But first, let's look at the stories we're following today. We've got good news from the election fraud front. Last week, the Arizona State Supreme Court sent back to trial a case filed by former Republican gubernatorial candidate Kari Lake. The case deals with mail-in ballot signature verification problems, and the justices agreed that Lake's concerns are legitimate and shouldn't have been dismissed by the lower court. Lake told Just the News that this opens the door to the greatest election case ever, and she called it a smoking gun that could prove voter fraud in her state. Let's listen to what she had to say.
It's a sham, the whole signature verification procedure. They're not following the procedures, and they're allowing literally tens of thousands. We projected more than 140,000 bogus ballots got rushed through in this signature verification portion of our elections. And we have three whistleblowers who came forward attesting to that, talking about what a sham operation it is, how literally scribbles and no signatures at all were being passed through. They were flagging and denying 10 to 15,000 signatures a day, these workers at Maricopa County saying these things don't match at all. And as they moved it up the process, somebody was just sending those through anyway.
Lake lost the 2022 governor's race to Democrat Katie Hobbs by a mere 17,000 votes. Her signature verification lawsuit is only one of seven complaints that she's filed alleging election fraud in Arizona. The others include issues concerning ballot chain of custody, voting machine and ballot printing errors, and voter disenfranchisement. Her other complaints have been denied, and she could still face sanctions in the current case. And speaking of elections, we're just days away from the most important race of 2023. We're talking about the judicial race for the swing seat on Wisconsin's Supreme Court. Leftist Janet Protasiewicz is facing off against conservative judge Daniel Kelly. A Protasiewicz win on April 4th would likely shift the political direction of the dairy state dramatically to the left. It could turn Wisconsin, as one concerned state legislator told The New American, into a Washington state. Ooh. The race also has national implications. If Protasiewicz wins, Wisconsin state Democrats will likely redraw the state's political map, knowing that a challenge from Republicans will end up before a favorable state Supreme Court. A redrawn map would not only likely give Democrats complete political control of Wisconsin, but it would favor them in federal House races. But despite her rhetoric about fairness and justice, it turns out that Protasiewicz may harbor very racist views. Two people who know the judge, her former stepson and a self-described liberal friend of her ex-husband, have recently come forward with explosive allegations that the candidate used the N-word to refer to black litigants while she was a prosecutor in Milwaukee County. Here, her former stepson, Michael Madden, reluctantly telling a reporter that she used racial slurs.
Did you ever hear her use a racial slur?
I did, but I can't give you a specific example of, you know, when it was. It was during some of the roundtable stuff where she would be, again, drinking comes into it, and the more drinking that was going on, the more less filter that she had.
Which racial slur?
I don't really want to say it, but it's the one that everyone knows.
What letter does it start with?
The same letter that no starts with.
Okay, so you heard.
So no, I don't want to say it. And I
okay.
Hello.
But you're saying Janet said the N-word.
I've heard her say it, yes.
How many times?
That I can't give you a number on. That's many years ago, but it wasn't once.
What context?
In discussions about certain, you know, cases that she was working on and different, items that went on.
Shockingly, major media outlets in Wisconsin have somehow completely missed this story. Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, however, didn't miss the media's blatant double standard when it comes to reporting allegations of racism.
Can you just imagine if a Republican candidate was abusing their elderly spouse, might have a little bit of a drinking problem causing that, use the N-word liberally in their official duties. Can you imagine how the press would be treating that? They would have broken into the original moon landing. Bring you that news, right? It is scandalous what the mainstream media is now reporting on this race. I'm here to tell you, it's not a fair fight, it's not a level playing field. I say that all the time, and it's consistent. Okay, so it's gonna be up to we the people.
And leave it to communist China to accomplish what's been nearly impossible for years, and that's bringing Republicans and Democrats together. On Monday, the House of Representatives passed the Stop Forced Organ Harvesting Act of 2023 by a vote of 413-2. The bill, like its counterpart in the Senate, would impose a range of stiff penalties on anyone who's complicit with China's practice of forced organ harvesting from prisoners, which has included persecuted political dissidents and religious and ethnic minorities. H.R. 1154 would also mandate annual reporting on such activities in foreign countries, which would mean primarily China. Forced organ harvesting is when prisoners are killed for their organs, which are then sold on the black market. It's been going on for decades in communist China, and it has taken an enormous toll. No one knows how many people have been killed in China as unwilling organ donors. So joining me to discuss today's stories is the New American's executive senior editor, Steve Bonta. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
It's been a long time.
It has been. My hair continues to grow out. So, I need a haircut desperately.
So isn't this nice to see unity in the country?
Well, you mean on Capitol Hill?
Yes.
Regarding China?
Yes.
Well, the thought that was running through my mind when you reported that item was, I want to know who the two people are in favor of forced organ harvesting.
I was going to ask you that. Apparently you don't know.
First of all, let's clarify what we're talking about here. So forced organ harvesting is when you take a person who is a prisoner, and in China that often means a Christian, a Falun Gong practitioner,
a Uyghur,
an uppity Uyghur, or some other uppity minority who's had the temerity to question the regime's official policy on this or that
right,
measure.
Right, how dare they?
Okay. And you, I suppose if you want one kidney, then you can take a kidney forcibly without killing them. But usually involves taking their life. In fact, I was watching a video last night, I think it was Lad Bible or something like that, in which a former Uyghur surgeon in China's Xinjiang province, who now lives in exile in the UK, was describing effectively being coerced into doing this. And what they did was they harvested organ from one guy who had just been gunned down by a firing squad, but they deliberately shot him so that he was still alive. And then they made the surgeon remove several of his organs while he was still alive without any anesthetic, so forth. That's just one example. No one knows the scale on which it's being practiced because it is so secretive, but we do know that if you live in China or if you have access to the Chinese organ market, if you need a heart, or a liver, or a kidney, or a lung, or whatever, you can typically get it in a very compressed time frame, sometimes only a few days, a week or two. Whereas if you do that in the United States, playing by Western rules, you pretty much have to wait for a qualified donor to die.
This has been going on, though, for decades, and we've known
this.
And we've had testimony in Congress before, too, if I recall correctly, again, decades ago. So it's nice to see that this is being recognized. Obviously, there's more behind the scenes. You and I have talked off camera. You know, what has China do to really tick off the Western elites? Because it seems like now they're really going for them when for decades we have been building up China.
For decades, the Western attitude towards China's little peccadilloes was this.
Yes, yeah.
Because we were making lots of money, and China was sort of most of the time more or less feigning to be our friend.
Yes.
Okay, there was a Taiwan Strait crisis back in the mid-90s under the Clinton administration, and that was all smooth. That came very close to war, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
How soon we forget. But that kind of got smoothed over, and for a long time, you know, the Taiwan issue and these other bones of contention were sort of set aside so that everybody could make money and everyone was happy. But of course, then COVID happened. And I think COVID really has been the catalyst for all of this, because during and after the COVID pandemic, the following have taken place. Number one, China took advantage of the fog of COVID to basically conquer Hong Kong.
Right.
To violate the treaty that they had made over Hong Kong, which was to give them 50 years of more or less untrammeled freedom, and passed the so-called national security law, proceeded to crack down. Hong Kong is now just another communist Chinese city. Okay. And I can attest to this because I've traveled through Hong Kong a number of times recently. And the last time was last year en route to the Philippines. And I just was in the airport, but the airport had become like a garrison. I mean, there were multiple security checks, policemen everywhere. It was unbelievable.
You could tell the Chinese were
so that's control. Number one. Number two, rather than express even a modicum of sympathy or concern or compassion for all of the millions of victims of COVID worldwide, among whom, for example, my father was one of them, and a number of other people that I know died of COVID. And so instead of expressing compassion for these millions of souls, their response was, how can we take advantage of this? You know, openly bragging about how this is a good chance for us to, because of our COVID, zero COVID, and it's going to infect the West, and it's going to give us economic advantage. And so all this stuff and other things of this nature. Number three, of course, has been what they've been doing vis-a-vis Taiwan the last several years.
Right.
Aggressively flying almost daily military sorties toward the island when Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited, of course, in defiance of Beijing, launching, a week-long salvo of missiles and naval exercises simulating an invasion and or blockade. Yeah. The nonstop bellicose rhetoric, the increasing harassment of U.S. and other foreign ships in the South China Sea, which they now regard as their own private lake, and on and on and on. All of this has emerged during the COVID era.
And we've had enough, right.
What do you think? I think so. Yeah, it's really pushed the West and the U.S. in particular to the point where, the blinders are off. The scales have fallen off our eyes. And even the radical Democrats on Capitol Hill are seeing more or less clearly, at least on this issue.
Yeah. What do you think of those two election stories? Seems like this Kerry Lake saga, whenever you think it's gone, it's been put to bed, it comes back.
Well, I mean, I wish Kerry Lake well.
Yes.
Of course, as you mentioned, I believe in the presentation, only one of her grievances has been still has legs, at least as far as Arizona is concerned. I mean, she may appeal to a higher court. We'll see. But it's pretty clear, and I say this as someone who has lived in Arizona.
Is there no place you haven't been?
Well, a lot of places I haven't been, but I happen to have lived in Arizona, love Arizona, but it's most definitely a purple state now. It was a red state when I moved there in 2016, and it was verging into purple when I left 2 years later because it's attracting lots of refugees from California and in particular, and it's changing the demographics. And, of course, lots of illegal immigrants coming in from the South. So these are changing the demographics,
right?
The political
That's happening all over the West,
of Arizona.
Obviously.
So, I mean, I have no reason to doubt
that this
Kerry Lake's claim. Certainly, in 2020 and 22, it appears that Maricopa County in particular, and probably Yuma County and several other major counties, were victimized by electoral fraud.
Well, I mean, she's claiming 140,000 bogus ballots, which is obviously
that's
way past the margin.
Sure,
of victory.
I mean, 2022 was basically a reprise of 2020
in
miniature. It wasn't quite so widespread, but it didn't have to be.
Yeah. We've looked at the 2020 election, and we even did an issue on Kerry Lake. Here we go in Wisconsin. This is one of those races. It's actually been pretty widely reported, including from the New York Times, Politico, and The Guardian and whatnot, and everyone. There's so much money pouring into this. But somehow, in all the reporting and all the watch, it seems like the Wisconsin State Journal, the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal, apparently they missed this part, this allegation about a relative. I mean, we have multiple people confirming. Now, obviously, Ron Johnson's right. If this was a Republican, it could be the cat saying that, someone's racist and they would jump on it. What do you think of this?
Well, I mean,
you're shocked, right?
Well, certainly. I mean, and the story here, of course, is the lack of coverage as opposed to what we know would be happening were these allegations being made against a Republican candidate. The growing tendency to look minutely at every person's life.
Yeah.
And if they said the N-word once, 30 years ago, or if they, committed some other, you know, breach of etiquette or you know, offended what we, you know, modern woke sensibilities when they were in college in the 80s or whatever. You know, under those standards, I think probably nobody is absolutely lily white. We all have a past. The beauty of today is from the point of view of the censors and the woke minions, is that most people today came of age in the internet.
Yeah.
So there's a record of what people did. I'm very glad that no one knows the idiocies that I said or did back in the 70s when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Because like pretty much every other teenager, I was an idiot from time to time. But today, we have the tools to dig deep into people's past and traduce their character on the basis of the most minute breach of etiquette.
Well, I mean, it's I would argue this is not minute, especially considering she was a judge, if this did indeed happen, and that it's a pretty gruesome term. There are other woke standards that I think are really stupid, but I think we can both agree this is not the type of thing that should be glossed over. And that's what I think makes it more shocking that the major Wisconsin newspapers are not even.
Well, I'm just recalling the campaign a few years ago. Well, the campaign of hate against that Trump nominee for the Supreme Court, where we found out that horror of horrors, he committed some indiscretions when he was in college.
Are you talking about Kavanaugh?
Yeah, Kavanaugh.
Didn't it turn out not to be true?
Well, he allegedly did, right. You know, so, I mean.
Yeah, she came in and then, but.
He actually might have gone to a drunken party once as a college student.
Right, right. He was,
imagine that. You know? And now he wants to be a Supreme Court judge? Nah, bruh.
That was such a.
Come on.
Such a con job. All right, let's look at what else we got here. And something strange happened on March 9th. That was the day that journalists Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger were testifying on Capitol Hill about the infamous Twitter files. They discussed evidence that government agents hijacked Twitter to target political enemies. It was a very partisan hearing, with Democrats accusing Taibbi of endangering national security. But the stranger thing happening that day was at Taibbi's home in New Jersey. While he was testifying in Congress about the deep state's involvement with Twitter, the deep state sent a couple of IRS agents to his home, where they left a note on his door. This was either a remarkable coincidence or a not so subtle act of government intimidation of a witness, which, by the way, is a federal crime. The IRS wanted to talk to Taibbi about two recent tax returns that had been repeatedly rejected over alleged concerns about identity theft. Congressman Jim Jordan and other Republicans were outraged. In a letter to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and IRS Commissioner Daniel Werfel, Jordan wrote, quote, "The circumstances surrounding the IRS unannounced and unprompted visit to Mr. Taibbi's home at the exact time that he was testifying to Congress about the most serious government abuse he has witnessed in his career as a journalist are incredible. The IRS visit is all the more concerning in light of Mr. Taibbi's assertions that the IRS informed him the problems were not monetary, and he had never received any prior indication of any issues with his 2018 return. These facts demand a careful examination by the committee to determine whether the visit was a thinly veiled attempt to influence or intimidate a witness before Congress." And for our last story, things continue to escalate on the Russia-Ukraine front. After NATO pledged to station up to 300,000 troops along its borders with Russia, Vladimir Putin said that Russia will likely station tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus as a deterrent. The West has been trying to get a regime change in Belarus for years. In response to its hosting Russian nukes, the European Union will sanction Belarus. The EU has also said it will sanction any country that helps Russia evade its sanctions. Some countries have been doing this by buying EU goods and then selling them to Russia. To top it off, the U.S. is pressuring India, which currently chairs the G20, to come out with a statement condemning Russia. India has refused, preferring to take a neutral stance, which only increases India-U.S. tensions. All right, Steve, we got a few seconds here. The Taibbi story, that's one you dug up there. You don't think that's just a coincidence? Man, that has got to be the biggest coincidence ever if it just happened right then and there.
Well, my money's on not-so-subtle act of intimidation.
How
Yet to be proven, but come on. Apparently, the IRS has never, in the roughly 5 years that they've had this back and forth with Taibbi, have never visited his home.
Right, right. They happen to do it while he's testifying.
Yes.
How brazen is that? That they would, I mean, they obviously, they have such confidence that they would never get in trouble, huh?
Yeah, apparently so.
Well, thanks, Steve. Thank you for your time. For more truth behind the news, make sure you're subscribed to our robust biweekly print issue of The New American Magazine. You can subscribe online at thenewamerican.com or by calling 800-727-8783. And stay tuned, because after these messages, Rebecca Tarrow interviews an advocate for patients endangered by lethal hospital COVID protocols. We'll see you on the other side.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At The New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but The New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.
The federal government is planning to end the COVID public health emergency in May, but that doesn't end the narrative. Vaccines will still be free, meaning paid for by you, the taxpayer, and adamantly pushed by Washington bureaucrats with a penchant for playing doctor. The Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act still protects providers from legal liability when their treatments harm patients. And the Medicare Evidence Development and Coverage Advisory Committee, which many identify as the death panels of Obamacare years, will take over where the COVID-19 treatments add-on payment system leaves off. Scott Shera is a leading advocate for patients endangered by lethal hospital COVID protocols, and he says all these details point to a hidden agenda by those who see the elderly and disabled as useless eaters. In an interview with The New American's Rebecca Tarrow, Scott Shera exposes the truth that he says is vital to saving the lives of those targeted by genocidal deep state designs.
Hi, everyone. Rebecca Tarrell with The New American Magazine. And with me today is a friend that you'll, any of our normal viewers and readers will be well acquainted with this man. His name is Scott Shera. He is from Wisconsin. He lost his daughter in a COVID hospital on October 13th, 2021. It is my great honor and privilege to be called by him, his friend. Scott, welcome.
Well, thanks, Rebecca. You've earned it. You've just been fantastic, and you've been a gift to our family.
Well, how kind of you. I appreciate that. The feeling is certainly mutual. Well, I wanted to start today by pointing out that you know, normally us mere mortals can't plan emergencies, but the federal government is planning to end the public health emergency regarding COVID in May of this year. So that's interesting that that's going to be able to be scheduled. It is also interesting that they are planning this now that the new death panels are firmly entrenched in our federal system, right? So unwrap this for us, what I've just introduced for our listeners, and then let's go on and see what this narrative is bringing us in regard to COVID.
People don't realize what actually happened with COVID. So on January 31st of 2020 was the first public health emergency relative to COVID. And by law, that public health emergency has to be re-upped every 90 days. So it was re-upped again on January 11th of 2023. And so now magically they're going to end it in May, which, by the way, that date doesn't make any sense because it doesn't line up with the 90 days. But regardless, I mean, that could have just been a Biden gaffe. I don't know. But I mean, the idea of it being scheduled to end doesn't make any sense. And if you look at the statistics, the live statistics, last time I looked at this was last week, there's roughly 1,000 people a day still being murdered in hospitals with a COVID diagnosis. So what the public health emergency allows from the perspective of a blow-by-blow, day-by-day situation is the PREP Act is still in play, which the PREP Act gives immunity from liability if the hospital and doctors and nurses follow the NIH protocol, which, you know, what gets the most press is remdesivir and ventilators. So they have immunity from liability. And then on top of the immunity from liability, the hospitals get paid bonus payments by the government for killing people. So, I mean, you can't make that up. But, you know, the new death panels, so what's going on? I want to back into the new death panels. So the public health emergency, the United States government, through a series of laws, so the entire Congress is in on this. They passed laws to give the Secretary of Health and Human Services unilateral authority to issue a public health emergency without congressional oversight. So wow. He did that back on January 31st of 2020, as I mentioned. Well, then what happened during that, as soon as he did that, so that was January 31st, February 4th, he implemented the PREP Act. So then the FDA now had what they needed in place to implement EUAs, emergency use authorizations. And they immediately did that for ventilators. And second, they did it for remdesivir.
And what is what, and real quickly, I know that you've got this top of mind. What are the survival statistics for remdesivir and ventilators?
A ventilator with COVID has a 90% kill rate. And I'm specifically saying with COVID because of the fact that, you know, ventilators have their place, but it is not with COVID. COVID is a respiratory disease of the lungs, and it produces many clots in the lungs. It is not a thing where you need a ventilator. And remdesivir has a 75% kill rate. So you've got things that are being used that are known to kill people, and they're not changing the protocols once the statistics are out. You know,
and we knew that about remdesivir before COVID, didn't we? The Palm clinical trial wasn't, when was that? Was that in 2019?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right about the time. I mean, of course they knew that ahead of time. And the specifics to get a EUA approved is there has to be no other drug available for the drug that they want to be approved.
Right.
And so, of course, we knew ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine were available. So what they did was the federal government squashed the studies. And yeah, I did a podcast on this with Del Bigtree and showed the particulars of how they squashed the studies. Mm-hmm. So that they could get remdesivir approved. And then, of course, the third thing that they did under EUA was approve the jab. And as we've learned about the jab, and then I'll get back to the question that you asked about the death panels, but what we learned about the jab through the Brooke Jackson case is, so Brooke Jackson's a former Pfizer employee. She became a whistleblower and filed a False Claims Act claim against Pfizer. And Pfizer's defense was, we have an OTA, Other Transaction Authority, contract with the Department of Defense to produce a prototype, not a vaccine. And so no testing is required. And then the federal government came in behind Pfizer. So remember, the federal government is supposed to be protecting whistleblowers, but they came in behind Pfizer and said, yes, what Pfizer is saying is true. And we are wanting a motion to dismiss. Because there's no case. If you didn't have the contract didn't require you to test and there was no vaccine, obviously there's no case. So just think through that, wrap your head around what that means. That means last night I was watching the news, and you know, we may end up going on that rabbit trail, but I watch certain news now just to see how these narratives are playing out. So I was watching Newsmax last night to see how they were playing out the narrative of the bank failing. And then you see in between, they have, you know, they have a vaccine commercial from Pfizer. So, I mean, come on. I mean, people should be able to figure out, I mean, these people have to get paid, right? So how do they get paid? They get paid from the advertisers. So do you think the advertisers influence what they're saying? You know, it's like 1 + 1 = 2. So then you asked about
The death panels, the med.
The death panels, yeah. So you did the article regarding rescuing Robert Pazer. So really busy at this time. And so this was right before Christmas. I asked Robert, I said, I know there's a smoking gun someplace. Can you help me research? So I was writing a long article and he found that document. And so this document was unilaterally by the Health and Human Services Secretary the day before Thanksgiving. And under a public health emergency, he has that unilateral authority. So now we have the legal death panels in place. You know, of course, they already have been doing the death panels illegally, but now they set it up so that they've crossed that T and dotted that I, that the death panels are literally in place. So why do they need them in place? Well, because before COVID, there were 62 million Americans on Medicare and Medicaid. Right. That population and group up. And those expenses accounted for 39% of the annual federal budget. Well, now there's 100 million on Medicare and Medicaid. So, you know, they've sold us on this business of collectivism, which is one of the bigger narratives that is out there. You know, over time, they've convinced us. So when way back when I was in kindergarten, so 1968, I'm dating myself. The Weekly Reader at that time said it's irresponsible to have more than two children. So they were setting this idea of collectivism up where, you know, we can't take care of the entire population. And so if you, I'll just give you a quote. So you know who Ezekiel Emanuel is. And Ezekiel Emanuel, he, you know, for those who don't know, he was one of the chief architects of Obamacare. So Obamacare was
patched. And he's the brother of Rahm Emanuel, who said, never let practice go to waste. Right.
Exactly. Well, what Ezekiel Emanuel said, this is all the way back to 1996. So if you don't think what I'm saying is real, I mean, you just have to look at the players involved. So he
and there's a paper trail. Yeah,
exactly. And so Obamacare is passed on March 23rd of 2020. He wrote in 1996 as a precursor, quote, services provided to individuals who are irreversibly prevented from being or becoming participating citizens are not basic and should not be guaranteed. So that was my daughter, Grace. So Grace was one of those non-contributing citizens. But of course, they don't look at it from the right perspective. And you know, Grace was the most contributing citizen I've ever met. She changed my life. You know, she was, but in the dollars and cents perspective, she was a non-contributing citizen.
Right.
But
and just to explain, to any of our viewers who might not know, Grace had Down syndrome. And so she is considered by those who do not believe in God to be a useless eater, basically. Those of us who do believe in God know that she is a rare and precious soul. And therein lies the difference. That is what we're looking at. What we have achieved through tolerance. We're tolerating all of these different ideas that put the rights of God to the side. And this is what we get. This is the society that we get. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Please go on with that thought. But I just had to say that because we are. This is exactly the fruits of our, the wages of sin, so to speak.
It's right on. Your comment is a great segue to a bigger topic that at least I think is a bigger topic to talk about, because we got into this mess because of rejecting God. And so what I see as the biggest just to define these terms, there's esoteric narratives, which means it's behind the scenes. Nobody really knows this. Right. Other than the people pulling the strings.
Inside knowledge, right.
Yep, inside knowledge, and versus exoteric agendas. And those are the ones that they let us in on. So like the banking situation, that's the latest exoteric narrative. So, you know, you start processing that. And I actually dissected the last one before the banking one, which was the lab leak one. So we can use that as an example. And hopefully it will help people to wake up as to what's going on. And so I haven't dissected the banking one yet, but you know, my first reaction when I saw it, I thought, I mean, I wonder how many months or years they already had that plan for that bank to fail.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so this just didn't happen. And then, you know, we've got, you know, the government comes to the rescue. I mean, what, you know, just, it's all an illusion. Yeah.
One banking fail after another. And of course, as we know, the ultimate goal is CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. Because of course we have the FTX, failure too. So they're going to crack down all in the name of consumer safety. That is the exoteric narrative, but it's really the esoteric is enslavement, our enslavement. And ultimately, like you said, through things like COVID and the jab, are murder through the death panels and the like.
Well, I think COVID, just as a, you know, just say COVID as an overall narrative. So COVID, I break COVID into three lanes. The, you know, the virus lane, you know, what is this thing? Okay, so you can look at that. Then you look at the jab lane, you know, the bioweapon jab, sure, that whole lane. And then, you know, I'm in the hospital murder lane, hospital, which, you know, that opened up my mind to all of this. So,
but it just all relates to depopulation. The decades old, actually centuries old agenda of depopulation. Yeah,
absolutely. The depopulation agenda is big. So why did they use COVID? You know, so COVID, of course, was an excuse to unleash a bunch of things. But while, you know, how the magician has always got one thing going on over here while he's doing this over here. Well, COVID, exactly. I see it as, you know, it's a monster distraction. You know, everybody's focused on this. Well, what are they doing over here?
Hi, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm the host of IMTV's daily talk show about news and events in America. And I want to say a good word for the New American Magazine. Not only because Alex Newman has joined us as somebody who is periodically hosting a show, but because New American Magazine represents an alternative media that is willing to tell people the truth. With so much fake news spreading about, and the fact that right now this country's in an existential crisis, we remember who we are and where we come from and what our principles are, or we die. Reading New American Magazine can keep you up to the minute on the issues that are challenging us as a people and on which that survival hangs. You can check it out and subscribe at www.thenewamerican.com.
There's so much evil. Some of the things that I have recently learned about organ harvesting and child trafficking, you know, that's what's going on over here. And that whole satanic agenda, I mean, it is so evil. It was hard for me to even do some of the initial research on it, Rebecca.
So do you think one of the, ultimately going back to what you said, though, that one of the primary reasons for COVID is we need to get rid of a lot of these useless eaters that are draining the Medicare, Medicaid systems?
Well, I actually think that that's part of the exoteric, right, because it's easy to find. What I think the esoteric agenda with COVID is to get us into a mindset that we will be begging for security and comfort. And so you add onto COVID, add the banking crisis, add food shortages, add power outages, and pretty soon we've got the whole population ready. And this is what I think the bigger esoteric agenda is we're ready for a savior, not the savior. We're ready for a savior. And so then Satan reinvents himself as the angel of light. So it's just the opposite side of the same coin. So remember, Satan doesn't care if he is evil or less evil. He just cares that he gets our souls. So we'll be clamoring for the chip, or, you know, whatever they promise us to make. I mean, we're going to get life back to normal. We're sorry we screwed up on this lab leak. If you just look at the whole idea of a lab leak, which I want to drill that down a bit, but just think about that. If they can convince us that this was a lab leak, well, now it's automatic to have amnesty for it, because, oh my gosh, this thing escaped. That's how this happened. I mean, and then we panicked. And so we put all this stuff in place, you know, and so, you know, like the jab. And, you know, so, I mean, we really screwed up. We're not going to screw up like that again. So, I mean, that's the whole amnesty line. So that's what I see happening as the cabal's way out of it. But, you know, if you look at these two sides of the coin, that's really an important thing to look at. So on one side is Satan's evil side, so the cabal, and then the other side, which is just less evil because it's still Satan, is the angel of light side. So the things that will present it on that angel of light side are going to look good. Right. You know, we've got to make sure that no bank ever fails again. So you can see, okay, so all these things are going to fight against each other. So it gives the appearance that we're in this battle, and Satan has done really a great job of getting our psyche through programming to think of things in terms of evil versus less evil, not evil versus good, because only God can be good. So when we talk about abortion as an example, so, you know, we've got on the evil side, you should be able to abort the baby, you know, till the day that they're born. Then the less evil side is, well, yeah, overall abortion is wrong, but there's certain situations that we should allow abortions. So we're really saying that it's murder is murder still okay. It's just a matter of degree. So that's that type of dialectic that Satan gets us into. And that's what I'm trying to warn people of, is that this angel of light side is a disguise. God tells us, he warns us that Satan is going to do that. And you know, the second beast system called the false prophet system, you know, there's going to be signs and wonders and all kinds of things that are going to look like God, but it's not God. There's going to be lots of security and comfort solutions being offered. That's the way I see it playing out. So
goes right back to the old saying, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And right now we have too many people who value life more than freedom. If you think about it, there are things worse than death, such as slavery. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, I always say this isn't looking so much like the land of the free and the home of the brave anymore, the way we're acting, that we are willing to sell ourselves into slavery for safety and comfort. But there won't be safety and comfort. That's the thing. Once they have all of these, once they do implement the central bank digital currency, you won't be able to buy your groceries if you don't have the jab, for instance. Right. And this is not conspiracy theory. We have written extensively at the New American Magazine about this, from, again, that paper trail that they leave. All of the insiders, the deep state agents, they say these things out in the open. But the media doesn't cover it, so nobody hears about it. What do you say to people who call you a conspiracy theorist? They say, oh, this is just a bunch of bunk.
Nobody said that to my face yet, but if somebody called me a conspiracy theorist, I would say, let's just look at the facts together, because everything is a conspiracy until you can prove it. But once you can prove it, it's no longer a conspiracy. So let's just look at the research together. I've spent the hours. I mean, you've got to spend the hours. You can't just believe a talking head. You spend the hours and you see the actual documents yourself. So like when I saw the Brooke Jackson documents, you know, I didn't hear this from somebody. I actually looked at the federal government's filing for the motion to dismiss. I could not believe my eyes. You know, so you start seeing this. And so people say, oh, it's a vaccine. It's not a bioweapon. Okay, let's look at the document together.
Right.
I'll show you what the document says. I have it posted on Grace's website. So if people want to find it, I mean, they can find it. So that's what I would say. I mean, I'm very comfortable being called that because I've done the research.
Exactly. You know exactly how to prove your point. And, you know, conspiracy simply means something that is behind closed doors, something that is, as you pointed out, esoteric. And that does exist. It was back around the time of the Kennedy assassination that the CIA cooked up that derogatory term, conspiracy theorist, just to demonize anyone who questioned the narrative. And right now, it is a very unwise thing to not question the narrative if you value your own life. You know, you just brought up Grace's website. I want you to have a chance to, how can people get in touch with you, find out more? Tell me about Grace's website, about your podcast, about your emails and all of that.
So people can reach out to me. There's a contact us form on Grace's website. The website address is ouramazinggrace.net. We are going to have another website dedicated to Grace, actually a landing page coming up, but you know, I don't have that I can talk about yet. But so people can contact me through the website. The podcast that I started is called Deprogramming with Grace's Dad. And the reason is because, you know, as I think through why did God allow Grace to die prematurely, And, you know, there's lots of reasons. I don't know all of them yet. You know, one of them, of course, was to save Robert Pazer. But, sure. You know, as far as me personally, I looked at, okay, what have I learned since Grace died? You know, I learned our country is completely corrupt. Our citizens are, for the most part, you know, critical thinking has been trained out. So we have a bunch of zombies walking around. And, but third and most important is how programmed I personally was. And sure. I still am. I mean, this is going to be the rest of my life. I was not awake. I didn't know any of this stuff. I mean, so, you know, when I realized Grace was murdered, then you start, okay, well, what's the reason? And, you know, multiple doors got opened up to show me these things that I'm explaining now. So, I mean, sure. People shouldn't look at me as somebody, well, you've got decades of experience of thinking about conspiracies. I mean, I've only been working on this from this vantage point since April. Grace died in October of 21. April of 22 is when I first started seeing there's an agenda. And, sure. You know, so, you know, but I've committed the time researching. So it's huge, Rebecca. Yeah. You know, just to take this, you know, the idea of the lab leak, I just want to close on that. So, you know, so right. They talk about, you know, the wet market. Then Mark Levin, I mean, strangely, I used to watch Mark Levin before I was awake. And I thought, why? Well, I'd look forward to watching him on Fox on Sunday nights. Well, all of a sudden he does 2 weeks ago, he's just all on fire about, you know, we got to convict these people. It's a lab leak. And I thought, wow, I already know the lab leak is debunked. What is going on here? So then I saw David Martin did a piece on the lab leak showing the documents, the literal documents to show the United States was the one behind the whole narrative. We created the entire thing. So I saw those documents. Okay, you know, you see those, you can't unsee them. All right, but still, that is not the real story. Because just process that anybody that's presenting knowledge. So this was Satan's trick back in the garden. Satan's trick back in the garden was to get Eve to buy into the tree of knowledge. God offered the tree of life. And so it seems like there's a race to expose knowledge, but there's no life in that knowledge. And so I see all of that as part of the setup on the angel of light side, because if you're going to present knowledge without reconciling to God, how do we get here? We have to repent to get back to God. That's the only way we're going to get through this. And so if there's no repentance when you're trying to expose knowledge to the population as to how evil this is, I see it all on the satanic side. So that's my
absolutely. Final reason. Yeah, I agree, because actually when you read the Bible, it's just a series of people falling into licentiousness and sin, and then God handing them over to be enslaved to their more powerful enemies. And then repentance comes and they're freed. So you're exactly right. We're in that phase right now where we are about to go into a period of slavery. And until we repent, things aren't going to get better. And that requires every single one of us looking at ourselves and going, okay, who's first in my life? And if the answer is not God, it's the wrong answer. Right?
Well, I think that's spot on. And I want to share with you when we talk about repentance. So, you know, Grace was murdered. I know that. So who do I blame? You know, obviously the doctor, I can blame the doctor. He prescribed the meds. I can blame the pharmacist who approved the meds. I can blame the nurse who gave Grace the meds. I can blame the hospital administrator. I can blame Ascension Hospital System for taking bonus money from the government. I can blame the federal government. I can blame, you know, Charles Schwab, Anthony Fauci, the list goes on and on. But the fact is I have to blame myself first, because even though we never took the jab, Grace was never vaccinated, we still were motivated by fear. Yeah. And that's what got Grace to the hospital. Every time you're motivated by fear, it is not from God. God did not give us a spirit of fear. Right. So I missed it. The fear of Grace's oxygen being in the high 80s motivated me to take her to the emergency room. And, you know, that's maybe the most important message I could ever share with somebody, because I lost my daughter because I relied on myself, meaning my fear, instead of relying on God. you know, it's clear God does not give us a spirit of fear. So every time you have fear, you should go opposite. So my fear motivated me to take Grace to the hospital, and she's not here because of that.
Well, I certainly don't blame you for her death. I know you were a loving father, and you are a loving father, and your wife is a very loving mother, and I know your lives have been so drastically changed through this experience, but I greatly admire you for turning this into good for others, especially with things like your hospital rescue of Robert Pacer, and everybody can find that story in The New American. We wrote that just not too long ago, it appeared. I'll have to include the link when we post this video online. I would love to continue. We are out of time right now, Scott, but I'll have you back soon and we'll talk about more of this. That's because we've got a lot more coming up, because they're still pushing the jab. They're still pushing things that are not good for us. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Rebecca.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now, radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board. And I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack. And because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
Next up, Robert Owens, the host of Constitution Corner, answers the question, what is the best form of government? His answer may surprise you.
Hello and welcome to Constitution Corner. I'm your host, Robert Owens. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution is far more important than most Americans realize. It addresses a fundamental issue in politics, namely, what is our form of government? Now, many don't know this answer, which is why we need everyone to subscribe to our social media channels so they can like and share this information. Our founders had many historical examples to consider. In the ancient world, you had many city-states such as Athens and Sparta. There were very small places, really no bigger than a typical county in America today, but they were sovereign political communities. These small Greek cities were known as a polis and were highly centralized. If it had a democratic regime, it could gather all of the citizens in one place and right there pass laws that would affect the whole territory. Also from the ancient world was the idea of empire. Empire was just the opposite of a Greek polis, and some of these ancient empires were huge, but they were very decentralized because there was no technology. There was no electricity, no telephones, none of the things that we have today. In those days, if an emperor issued an edict, it could be months before it got to the borders of the empire. Now, later on, you got feudal states, which were sort of in between a Greek polis and an ancient empire in size. France and England are good examples. They were in between in terms of size, but they were also decentralized. A king really didn't have undisputed sovereignty. He had to share it with the various aristocrats, with church officials and others who had their own sources of revenue and their own sources of manpower. Now, borrowing from a Greek philosopher named Solon, the Romans pursued an idea of government in which laws would be written down and respected. This balanced the desires of a representative government with the rights of the individual, thus curbing the excesses of pure democracy. This was the genesis of an idea called the Republic. However, one of the generally accepted lessons of Rome, as it was understood in the 1770s in America, was that a republican system of government would really only work in a small, homogeneous, agrarian civilization. However, as we look at the 17th and 18th centuries, we see better political organization, better technology, better communication, and you're really able to organize larger entities better. And these improvements in organization and communication led many to seek the Age of Enlightenment ideal of liberty. What was the best way to unleash liberty? Well, the answer that the American founders had was, of course, federalism in a constitutional republic. It was a large modern state. It was capable of defending itself against other large modern states. And as such, it was viable. But it also allowed substantial citizen control of community, of municipalities, of counties, and of individual states within that federal union. Now, while many believe the system of government would not work in a large geographically and commercially diverse area, several of the founding fathers claimed that it would actually work best under those circumstances. Now, Article 4, Section 4 is known as the Republican Guarantee Clause. It says that every state within the federal union must have the same form of government, and it must be a republic. Why is it important that the form of government is so explicitly stated? Well, at the 1787 Constitutional Convention, James Graham of Pennsylvania issued a concern that somebody could rise up in one of the states and set themselves up as a military dictator, as a monarch of some sort. Addressing this issue during ratification, James Madison wrote in Federalist 43 that if you don't have the same basic form of government each state, then there's likely to become regime conflicts within the states themselves, and the federal union could easily break up as a result. Failure to have compatible state governments could lead to tensions with other states, and then, of course, that breakup of union. So why is this so important? Well, the founders wrote at length it was because they did not want North America to become like Europe. And they also didn't want the kind of government the Native Americans had, resulting in numerous wars among themselves and tribes. They wanted a unified national state with a free trade zone, no tariffs among the states, and they wanted them to be at peace with one another. The goal is to control something like a large modern state, but without the defects of centralization. It is a balance of power so that the nation is big enough to defend itself, but is also sufficiently self-governing on all levels so that it doesn't become a tyranny. That's what made America special. Don't just know your Constitution, live it. Join with me every week as we give a fresh perspective on topics that matter to you and to your liberties. Please visit jbs.org and thenewamerican.com to find more information about this topic, as well as other critical information. And please share this with others.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to The New American TV. And remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. And make sure you're subscribed to our robust biweekly print issue of The New American Magazine. You can subscribe online at thenewamerican.com or by calling our office at 800-727-8783. Have a good rest of the day, and we will see you tomorrow.